This is Food for Thought. Call Carol at 866-823-1077. And now, it's Food for Thought.
After 1 o'clock on the Pulse, 107.7 WTPL. And we're brought to you by Belmont Hall and Restaurant on Grove Street in Manchester, belmonthall.net. Also brought to you by Puerto Vallarta Mexican Grill. They will be in-house tomorrow,
yes.
I do believe. And they are Puerto Vallarta mgrill.com. And when you visit our many sponsors of Food for Thought, don't be shy. Tell them you heard it on Food for Thought with Carol and Mike. We appreciate it.
There you go. All right. And well, we're going to continue the trend here today, which is Cinco de Mayo. And let's welcome on Linda Ditch of What's Cooking in Kansas and her blog There and Back Again. You can check it out at lindaathompson.blogspot.com. And welcome, Linda.
Hey, how's everybody today?
We are good.
Hola, ¿cómo está?
Muy bien.
Well, that's about where my Spanish ends.
That's me too.
Yeah, that's where mine goes too. That's about it. I took French. I can't, you know, I didn't do Spanish back in school. So. But yeah,
I didn't either.
You've got a whole, well, tomorrow you're going to have the Puerto Vallarta restaurant thing on. You're going to be all ready for Cinco de Mayo by the end of this week, aren't you?
I know. And you know what? I love Mexican food. I can eat it every day. I love it.
I could too, quite honestly. Yep. How is the Mexican food scene in Topeka, Kansas, right there in the middle of the country?
There's tons. And there are a lot of Mexican immigrants here, and they have all opening restaurants. I have one of my favorites just down the street from me here downtown, called Lupita's, and you can get authentic Mexican food anywhere. There are Mexican shops all over the place here in Topeka. So no shortage of Mexican food here.
And you know that trend kind of happened up here too.
Finally, I think the last place in the country, quite honestly.
But have you noticed the past few years they popped up all over the place around here?
Well, you have people moving from other parts of the country where they're used to having good Mexican food. I lived in Toledo, Ohio, as I mentioned earlier, married to a woman of Mexican descent. And just like where you live, Linda, there were a lot of immigrants who came up because there's a lot of agriculture and they were working the fields. And naturally, a Mexican restaurant or two would make sense. And it was the real deal. It was always run by Mexican families. But when I moved here in 1984, it was mostly chain restaurants.
Yes.
So like Chi-Chi's or Margaritas to a lesser degree, which is a local kind of chain.
Yep.
And I was really disappointed. And then, as you pointed out, Carol, it started to come along, and it's still got a ways to go.
I think
there's room for more, but at least we're going there.
Yep. And, you know, there's a lot of hidden ones around. You know, Mike, you're not around Manchester anymore, but there's a lot of them, like, hidden around Manchester. Like,
yeah, I never heard of this Humidor.
El Humidor's on South Willow Street.
Never heard of that. I know exactly where it is, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's those hidden ones that are usually really, really good.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, you are
right. They've
you
got
right.
the old recipes that came, you know, handed down for generations and families. Yep. Yeah, those are the ones that are really good.
Yeah. So what do you have in store for us today?
Well, I'm working on a blog that's going to go up in a little while featuring some recipes I got on two of the excursions I went on when I was on the cruise in February.
Oh, cool.
One of the excursions was called the Salsa and Salsa, which was great. They took us to a hotel in Merida, Mexico, which is in the Yucatan Peninsula. And in this hotel, we learned how to make guacamole and two different kinds of salsa. And then they taught us how to salsa dance. And that was
very
a blast.
Cool. That's awesome.
Did you like the dancing aspect of the Salsa and Salsa weekend?
I did, actually. That was a lot of fun. And what was great, I was by myself on this tour. And so, but, you know, well, there was, you know, a group of people, but none of my family came with me. And because I'm the foodie, they're not so much. Anyway, so I got to dance with the instructor. So, I mean, I had a great time because, I mean, he knew how to lead you through the dance, you know, the turns and everything. And, you know, he and I were the demonstration, so everybody else had to do. And that was great because it was just so smooth and nice, and I just felt so, you know, so Mexican and sassy being able to dance like that.
Linda, I can just see you doing that. Did he dip you?
Hey,
yes,
personal.
He did.
He did. Cool.
What's his name? Roberto?
Carlos, actually.
Oh, that was my next guess.
Okay, all right.
And his sister's going to be on the blog too. And he was a blast, and taught us everything about that region. It was near Progreso, is where our ship docked, and Meridia was about an hour away. And they make honey there. They grow habaneros, which in their sauces they use habaneros and not jalapenos. And it was a blast. It was so much fun. And then cool. The other tour I did was called the Tequila Experience, which, if you've ever done a wine tasting, this was a tasting with tequila.
Oh,
I'm
okay.
There. You got my attention, Linda.
It was an interesting experience. 9:30 in the morning, I'm stepping off a bus and they're handing me a margarita.
Oh, that's so tough to take, isn't it?
I know. And then you go in and you do a tasting of three different kinds of tequila, just like a wine tasting. You're looking for aroma, color, the consistency, the body of it, and there's all the different. I never knew tequila was, there were so many aspects to tequila. Sure. I did shots and drank margaritas. I didn't realize that there's such depth to tequila. And also I didn't realize that in Mexico, you cannot call something tequila unless it comes from a specific region of the country. Very much like champagne.
That's right. And the agave plant, and which looks like one of those giant, can't think of the kind of plant that when you burn yourself, you...
aloe vera. It looks like a big aloe vera plant.
Yeah, it looks like it does indeed. All right, so now you've done wine tours, or it sounds like you have. When you do, and if you saw the movie Sideways, you know that you take a little drink and you spit out the rest of it so you can continue to sample without getting wasted. Is that the same with tequila?
You know, the funny thing is, nobody was spitting it out.
That's because you were on vacation.
Exactly. That was my job. When they handed me that margarita at 9:30 in the morning, I'm like, oh, hey, I'm on vacation. Why not?
That's right.
Well, and if you would have, and of course, because there is a siesta daily, I assume, you get tired after a couple hours of that, you just knock off and start all over again at 3.
Well, in my case, we just kind of kept going.
Oh.
Because we had the margarita, we did the tasting, and then we had, which the recipe is what I'm putting on the blog, we did a mango margarita, which was amazing. It has chili sauce swirled around the glass and chili powder on the rim instead of salt. It was so wonderful.
That sounds really good. Different.
And then we had lunch with a guava margarita. And plus, we could have our choice of either a free beer, water, or soda. But then I'm grabbing water.
Yes.
And that night at dinner, then they asked me if I wanted a glass of wine. I'm like, no. I've had too much tequila today. I cannot drink anything else.
You know what's really a good variation is a prickly pear margarita. I don't know if you've ever had one of those.
Ooh, I haven't had one of those, but that sounds yummy.
It's got kind of a deep purple color to it, and it isn't that radically different from the traditional lime margarita. But it just has something extra, maybe just a touch of sweetness. And it just looks so darn cool, too.
And you were talking last week about the Jamaican margarita, and I was looking it up, and that's made with hibiscus flowers that are steeped in the tequila to give it that flavor. And also, I mean, some are sweetened with simple syrup, and some are sweetened with agave syrup. But it's made with hibiscus flowers, and that looks really interesting, too.
Well, sometime when you're out, you should ask if they make a Jamaican margarita, and if you have to tell them how to do it. If it's a good bartender, he or she will be able to replicate what you're asking, I would think.
I have to check it out because I've never heard of one until you mentioned it, and I was curious and got to Googling it. And Rick Bayless, there's a couple of really good Mexican chefs that have recipes out there for it.
Cool. Well, I'm glad could add a little bit to your life because you add so much to ours.
Oh, well, thank you. But yeah, on the blog, it'll have the mango margarita. And then from the salsa and salsa tour, it's got the guacamole recipe. Basic guacamole recipe. But, I didn't realize until I made it how easy guacamole is to make. And so I make it for lunch.
I
grab an avocado and I make it up for lunch. And that'll be my lunch sometime.
Yep, it's very good. You know, the only thing with avocados and me, and we just were talking about it with Chef Patrick, is I can never find them when they're ripe. Like, when I want to have guacamole, I want it, I might want it for that night. So you go and you buy it. And it's not something I usually plan for. You know, when you want it, you want it. And then they're not ripe. That's my problem.
I know. Lots of times the ones you find in the store, they're just, they have to sit for a couple of days to get ripe unless you get lucky. Sometimes if you look over, you know, where they, some grocery stores have a section where they put the overly ripe bananas and some of the stuff that's been ready to go. And every once in a while you'll find an avocado over there that's pretty ripe. But normally it is something you kind of have to think ahead of.
Right, that's true.
And I, you know, there's things like putting them in paper bags with like apples and stuff and things like that to try and make them ripen quicker. But I don't know that that actually helps. It's just kind of a matter of waiting it out.
Actually, Chef Patrick, I'm sure you didn't hear the segment. He actually told us that that does work like you would with bananas. It kind of speeds up the ripening process. Do not put it in the fridge. That's the worst thing to do with it.
Absolutely. And the same with, like, bananas and all that, too. Just keep them out. But, yeah, I mean, I would think putting it in a bag would ripen it like a banana. But, yeah, it's still a matter of you have to plan ahead.
Right.
I don't know that you could put it in the morning and have it ripe that night or not. I don't know how fast they ripen that way.
He said about a day. So, Linda, what are you going to be doing for Cinco de Mayo? Are you cooking or are you going to go down to one of the local places right near you? Or what are you going to be doing?
I think that I may be venturing out. You know, there's a couple of restaurants I haven't tried yet. And so I've been trying to talk to people and see if they want to come venture out with me. Or I may go to my standby down the street. But, you know, it's funny how Cinco de Mayo in this country, we tend to think that it's the celebration of Mexican independence, which is not. That's in September. It's actually the celebration of a battle the Mexican army won over the French. And in Mexico, it's like a regional celebration. But here, like, we've taken it over kind of like St. Patrick's Day and use it as an excuse to have a good time.
Have a drink, exactly.
Do we need an excuse?
I know. Apparently we do.
Yeah. We're grown-ups.
But hey, whenever you go to, we're all Mexican on Cinco de Mayo the way we're all Irish on St. Patrick's Day, right?
Exactly.
What is your favorite dish if you have a combination plate or plate de combinación? What do you like to have on your plate of Mexican food?
Well, I like a real Mexican enchilada, which usually has potato and peas in it. It's not typically what we think of as an enchilada. I like anything. I like pan fried tacos, with the handmade tortillas and, you know, just, I'm amazed how many dishes. I found this on that tequila tour. We had a lunch buffet and I was amazed how many dishes have potatoes in them. But there were quite a few dishes that had spiced potatoes in the mixture with the meat and everything else. And I'm guessing it's the same idea of stretching out a recipe so it goes farther.
I gotta tell you.
I made enchiladas a couple of months ago with a family here that makes Mexican spice chili powder, Pedro Lopez brand, which is really big around here. And their enchiladas had potatoes and peas in it. And when I go to the Mexican restaurants around here, lots of times that will be in their enchiladas as well. Some people don't like it, but I like it that way. I think it's neat. And I know I'm getting a real Mexican enchilada because they seem to all have those in them.
That's my favorite. I haven't seen potatoes in any Mexican food I've ever had in my life. I'm not saying it wouldn't be good or it doesn't exist. Must be maybe a regional preference because I don't see that around here.
You know, even when we went to Puerto Vallarta, I don't remember that either. And I had a few enchiladas because that's my favorite too. Well, I like enchiladas and I also like chile rellanos.
Ooh, yes.
Love those.
Oh, yeah, those are good too.
Yeah.
And, you know, I like the skin. I like quesadillas and, you know, burritos. You know, I like burrito stuff with everything, you know, with a nice good cheese sauce on top. But, the enchiladas that I've had around here are the ones that, you know, made by people I know whose ancestors are from Mexico and stuff. They all seem to have potatoes in them.
Interesting.
One thing that I've never accepted about, at least on my Mexican food, is sour cream. Now, I'm not a fan of sour cream to begin with, so maybe I've got a bias, but all my years of having authentic Mexican food within a family of people of Mexican descent, never saw sour cream, but I see, you know, they offer it all the time.
Yeah, it's probably an Americanization of it to help. Because, I mean, the thing about sour cream is it helps cut the heat of what you're eating. And so they probably added it for Americans because to tone down, you know, maybe help tone down the heat of it as well. But I like sour cream with my Mexican food, but I mean, a lot of people I know don't. It's just, you know, preference. But, you know, now that I think about it, though, a lot of the Mexican food I get there, you're right. I don't think it comes with sour cream lots of times. So maybe that is an Americanization thing. Then, you know, it tends to happen to everything that comes over to this country. So we make it our own.
And, of course, eating the chips, I'm going to guess that in Topeka, like most other places, you get that basket or that bowl of nacho chips just to kind of munch on so that you fill up and don't eat the expensive parts. Do you refrain? Because I have no self-control when I go to a local place.
No, not at all. And what I really like is when I go to a place and I know they've made their own chips. You know, they fried them up themselves, and sometimes they'll put seasoning on the chips. There's one place here that seasons their chips, and you can almost just eat the chips without anything on them. They're so good.
Yum.
And, yeah, no, you got to have the chips. That's why I make guacamole a meal. Because, I'm eating the chips anyway, so it's like, okay, well, I'll just have guacamole, you know.
There you go.
I haven't found a bagged chip yet that stands up to the homemade chips that you find, as you point out, Linda, in various Mexican restaurants. I have not found a brand that's as good as what you're going to get in a restaurant.
Well, and it's so easy to do it. I mean, just, you know, take a tortilla, cut it into wedges, fill it in some hot oil and crisp it up, or you can even put it on a baking sheet and, you know, lightly brush it with a little oil, put it on a baking sheet if you want to cut down on the fat, and bake it until it's crispy. And use it that way. I mean, it's so easy to make.
Sounds like a good suggestion.
You know, have you
ever, Carol, have you ever made nacho chips at home?
No. No.
But the bag stuff still, you know, isn't that good either. But I like Linda's suggestion, putting them on a cookie sheet, just spraying or just dusting, not dusting, but brushing a little bit of olive oil so that you get a little bit of crunch. That may be the way to go.
Well, you know what Chef Patrick brought in today as an alternative to the chips, because he knows I'm watching what I'm eating. He brought in the pita chips that he made.
Oh,
so,
sure.
You know, pretty much some pita bread. And, again, probably just brush it with some olive oil and a little bit of seasoning. See, I'd put cayenne on that.
Oh, yeah.
And then, you know, bake it.
Oh, yeah. That would be great.
Yum. Yum.
So yeah, no, I mean, you know, either bake, you know, pita chips or, you know, tortilla chips. If you bake them, you're going to save yourself a lot of calories and fat content just by doing the oven instead of putting them in the hot oil. So
right. Well, Linda, thank you so much for calling in and giving us another lesson in cooking and Cinco de Mayo and what you're going to be doing that day and what you did on your cruise.
Well, and you'll have to also check out, there's a recipe, too, for drunken salsa. And you'll have to check it out as well.
All right, cool. There is it, so I assume there's tequila in it?
Tequila and beer.
Oh,
really?
I got to check that out. Oh, my gosh.
And we'll find this on your on your blog site?
Yes, it should be up later this afternoon. So.
All right, and give us the address again to find it online.
It's lindaathompson.blogspot.com. And the blog's called There and Back Again. So you can always Google There and Back Again, Linda Ditz, and you'll find it. Easy.
And listeners, you know, if you're listening, it's a beautiful blog. You know, you have great pictures on it, and, you know, and it's easy, you know, easily accessible. So, yeah. So, again, lindaathompson.blogspot.com. Or like she said, just Google There and Back Again. There you go. Thank you, Linda. And we'll be talking next week.
See ya.
Okay. Talk to you then. Thanks. Bye.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
It's Food for Thought on The Pulse, WTPL 107.7. Inviting you to join The Pulse broadcasting live this Friday morning, the 1st of May. It's the New Hampshire wake-up show with Peter St. James, of course, Mr. Frank, and I'm not sure if Amy is on that morning or not. But it's the grand opening of Sear Lumber and Home Center, located right off Exit 7 of I-89 in Warner, broadcasting live. The grand opening takes place all weekend with a huge store-wide savings on most items, and they'll be giving away a Weber gas grill. I've had a couple of those in my years. They're so dependable. They're really great workhorses, and you might get one for nothing. So check out new Sear Lumber, the new store and home center in Warner. Very, very cool. Also want to let you know that all week long, you'll have a chance to get your mom qualified to win the Pulse's Mother's Day contest. The grand prize winner gets an overnight stay at the Gunstock Inn at Guildford, complete with dinner and spa services, and also $20 gift card to Express Jewelry Center on North Main and Concord, and you'll go to the grand prize drawing, which will take place on Friday morning, the 8th. So there you go. Lots of good stuff going on for Mom, Mother's Day, compliments of the Pulse, and our sponsors.
There we go. And I just want to give a little shout out. I have another shout out to do to Sean. I hear that Sean listens almost daily. Sean from over in at Blue Aqua. Blue Aqua restaurant over in Amherst in Salisbury Square. So I just wanted to give a little shout out. And let's welcome on our next guest, Susan Osborne of B Image Consulting. You can check her out on the web at bimageconsulting.com. And today we are going to be talking about the well-dressed man. But you know
gotta
what?
Gotta go. Bye-bye.
Actually, hold on. I forgot. Before we do that, I did clean my closet.
You did?
And I have before and after pictures.
Oh,
you better do play-by-play. This is radio, ladies.
Yeah, we'll do play. Don't worry, Mike. Don't worry.
So you did the before.
That's the before.
Oh, okay. So, guys, the before picture, you know.
Oh, wait.
No, let's say these look really good.
No, I know.
Show me the before picture.
I mixed it up.
Yeah, you got it.
Okay, so she does have a chandelier in her closet. How cool is that, love?
I told you.
Oh, yeah. Did you leave the doors open on purpose?
I did. Well, actually, there's no door in one of them that goes into my bedroom. But,
oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, mixing, matching of the colors, I can see different, you know, like some heavier fabric things mixed in with some lighter fabric things. Oh, she's got clothes on the floor. That's great. That's honesty.
Drawers pulled open.
I love it. Drawers are pulled open. Full clothes are not folded neatly. Mm-hmm. Shelves. And then her after pictures are beautiful.
Aren't they?
Including
yes.
Fresh flowers.
Oh, yeah. Love that touch
on
for sure.
On a nightstand.
Right, so I did good.
You
Susan,
did.
You totally
I'm
inspired
really
me.
Impressed.
And you know what I did this time, and I don't normally do this because you know I have to be in the mood when I do this. I, you know, because that was a huge task. That was huge. I mean, my closet's pretty big. It was a very big task, and I did a little bit every day. It worked out really well. And it took me about a week. But I did a little bit every day, and the pile, you should see the pile of clothes I have. Oh dear! All
but
my
can
friends...
you maintain this, Carol? Because once you get
yes.
it neat, sometimes you relax and go back to the
you know
old
what?
Ways.
This
I do.
This time I really took the time, and I have the tanks with the tanks, and I did them from light to darkest as best I could, and the short sleeves with the short sleeves, and the sweaters with the sweat. You know, everything is. Oh my gosh, it's so nice.
Yeah.
My jeans on the shelf, and I can see everything.
You can see everything.
I found clothes I forgot I had.
Mm-hmm.
I really did.
Yeah. The other thing, and it's fortunate you have, you know, the room in your closet for this, but it's nice to have all the accessories out. So, like, she can, you know, she's got her scarves out, hanging on hooks, and her jewelry out, and all of her shoes.
And
like, you know, everything, you're not digging for stuff.
No, and the two top drawers of that middle section underneath my chandelier, the left one opens up and it's all my rings, and the right one opens up, it's all my earrings. So it opens way wide, and they're all laid out, so it's pretty cool.
So here's the perfectionist in me, right?
Okay, go ahead. I want to hear it.
So, you know those hangers that have, like, the velvet. They're really thin hangers, and they're covered in like this sort of velvet-ish kind of material.
Yeah.
And it's really nice. I can tell that you have a few of them.
I do.
On the bottom. Those are great because they're really thin, and they keep the clothes hanging on the hanger. So the clothes never
right.
fall off. Like
exactly.
sometimes that happens
the plastic
with, I can
ones.
See some of the plastic ones
yes,
that you
you're
have.
Right.
Yeah.
You're right.
So what
you're suggesting that I do is to start replacing all those mm-hmm. and put them with the, mm-hmm. got it.
Is that a rack with clothes in front of a window?
Mm-mm.
It looks very bright. Keep going there. Yeah, right there in the middle. Doesn't that look like?
Well, that's my scarf's hanging up.
It looks very bright behind there.
Well, that is a window.
Okay, so you do have clothes in the window.
Well, those are my scarves.
Okay,
yeah.
All right.
They're just I hung it like.
Oh, I'm not criticizing. I'm just wondering if I'm seeing this right because you can afford curtains. Come on, you don't need to put scarves.
Oh no, those are curtains.
I know. Teasing.
Mike, I'm like, does he think that's one of my dresses?
Mike, we want to see a picture of your
yeah.
closet next week.
Well, you know, I could do that, but I would like to take a picture of Barbara's, which is side by side with mine. Which looks like Carol's before photos with shoes cascading out of the bottom. And mine is probably more clothes than it needs to be. I know that for a fact, but it's fairly neat. But still, I pull stuff out and it's wrinkled and I get so upset because, oh, God, I got to iron today.
And who wants to do that?
Nobody likes to iron.
No.
I don't mind it, but.
But I'm so glad that you do because do you know that's one of the biggest mistakes men make with their attire? Mm-hmm. Yep. It is wearing wrinkly clothes. And I get it. Nobody likes to iron, but, you know.
Sometimes you have to.
Sometimes you have to.
You know, it's not that hard. It take you 2 minutes to iron a shirt, basically, you know.
And it goes a long way.
It does.
Looking good.
But then you put your seatbelt on and you get everything wrinkled up again. So I try to wear something over it so it doesn't get down. And you see, I'm, you know, I'm not a typical guy, probably. So what do we, well, okay, so talk about guys today. I'm all ears.
Okay. So we've been eating guacamole here and I have guacamole everywhere. All right. So black shoes. Mike, do you think black shoes go with everything?
Probably not everything, but I would say 80% of things.
Yeah.
Qualify it.
Okay. Well, I'm just going to say that one of the, I would say the number one thing, a mistake that men make is they think black shoes just go with everything. And they don't.
No way.
No. Yeah. But but men often think that they do.
I wouldn't wear them with brown slacks, for instance.
What would you wear with brown? Actually, that's a common question that I get from some of my male clients when I have, you know, a navy suit or brown suit. What color
shoes do you think? Go with some kind of, you know, more of an earth tone, more of a brown. I don't think I'd wear black with it, though.
Great. Perfect.
Okay.
Good work.
And with black pants, you wear black shoes,
yes,
right?
Black shoes.
Okay, so
yes.
So the shoes should usually match your pants.
Yeah, exactly. So black, gray pants, black shoes.
But after Memorial Day, I can wear white bucks, right?
With my gosh. That went out a long time ago.
I know. I do not own those shoes.
Okay, so the other thing that they kind of do wrong in the shoe department is they wear their socks with the sandals.
Oh, that is like, so, you don't do that.
Absolutely,
Mike, do
not. First of all, I don't like sandals. I do not wear them, and my feet aren't especially ugly. Just don't like them.
Mm-hmm.
So you won't see me making that mistake.
Women do not like that. Well, the women who don't wear the socks with their sandals don't like that look on men.
Mm-hmm. It is the goofiest look ever.
Oh, it really is.
I mean, and let's just talk one little thing. You know, when I did meet Daryl, and I hope he's not listening, but, you know, I did have to kind of, you know, help him a little bit with his wardrobe. And the one thing, because we kind of met spring, summer, so it kind of got into, you know, the sandal season. And for some reason, I don't like those Teva sandals. I think they're ugly. I just don't like them. Like, no way.
With you there, sister.
Flip-flops. Mm-hmm. Like, you got to wear flip-flops. Some, you know, nice flip-flops. Mm-hmm. You know, the leather ones that, you know.
So what else did you need to correct or adjust? Because I'll share mine if you share yours.
Quite a few.
Oh.
We went on a few shopping sprees.
How long can you stay?
You know what it was with him? He all like the same color everything, like all gray tops.
Yes.
And all dark bottom, you know, and it just, you know, I'm like, and he has the color like me, so he can wear anything. You know, I can't get him to wear pink yet. It's coming.
Really?
Up. It's coming. It's coming.
Pink on a man,
but like
Susan.
Absolutely.
It works, right?
Oh, for sure.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, remember when we talked about the temperature of color? So pink is a cool color. So you have to have like the cool undertones in your skin to pull it off. So like Carol, you do. And Mike, you do too.
Mm-hmm. It's all the drinking I do. Go ahead.
So pink would be a great color.
I haven't quite gotten that far with him yet, but we just bought like an orange top. So, I mean, he's gone out of the box. Huge compared to what he did.
That doesn't actually surprise me because a lot of the male clients that I've work with, their very first question is get me out of the neutrals. Like they're afraid of color. Like and a lot of it is they just don't know how to mix and match it.
And that's exactly.
Yeah.
So if I mean pretty, you know, I will just be shopping and I'll be like, that would really look nice on you, and his first reaction, no way. And next thing you know, we're walking and he's back at that rack. I'm like, oh,
right.
You like it. And he's like, really? I go, that would be fabulous on you. And then we'll get it.
Well, Barbara's main criticism of me remains to be, or from the start wasn't so much my color selection, because I think I kind of understand that. But she said, you know, you're out in the public a lot, and you know, you look pretty good for your age. Pretty good. Thank you. You need to have a little bit more hipness to your look, because people might visualize you as kind of a hip, in the know kind of man about town. You need to reflect that publicly. And she's right. And she has bought some stuff. And I would say 90% of what she has put me in or suggested has been good. So I appreciate the guidance.
Probably something you wouldn't normally get yourself.
Not necessarily, right. But it wouldn't maybe be my first choice. Right. And I understand what she's doing there, because the image consultant, I mean, it's everything.
Right.
For people that just, you know, that first impression.
Exactly. Well, people have perceptions of you, right?
Mm-hmm.
From listening to you and what you're involved in.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you want those perceptions. You want your visual image to be in alignment with those positive perceptions.
No, when I go out in public, I have to think, okay, who's going to see me today and how bad do I look? So I'll make sure I take a shower. And even though I didn't shave today, there's only two other people that know that besides me. And that's
well,
that's
everybody
you guys.
Knows that now.
Mm-hmm. What about an unshaven face?
Oh, is that
talk,
on the
talk
list?
Talk to me about that.
Well, you know, the beard thing is so in right now, and I like the woolly mammoth beard thing, too. So, you know, if you're asking me from, you know, from a work standpoint, you know, a beard in the workplace, you know, if it's really groomed and clean, close, then yeah, perfectly fine. Yeah.
But remember the Don Johnson look on Miami Vice? I mean, that was a show in the 80s. And Sonny Crockett's whole thing was about a 4 or 5 day growth. And it really started guys doing that for a long time.
On the weekends, I don't like Daryl to shave.
Really?
I love his scruffy look. I love that. Love it.
Huh.
Yep.
Yeah.
That's me.
Same here.
Okay. Well, I just learned something today. I should let it go a couple days.
Yeah. Try it.
Love
see
it.
What Barbara says.
Yeah. She doesn't like it. At least I know you guys do. Okay,
so one of the big takeaways for men, I would say, is, and the biggest mistake, is that they have this perception that wearing the right clothes automatically means that they're dressing better. So, like, dressing isn't equivalent, you know, dressing up isn't equivalent to dressing better. So, for example, a man in sharp casual wear will look better than a man in sloppy suit.
Ah,
so
makes sense.
It all comes down to how the clothes are worn and the fit. It's all about the fit.
Yep.
Yeah. But you know, we were talking about, I have some common mistakes too that men make in the office. They often wear their suits too big. I see their shoulders are too wide. And what's interesting about that is, you know, when you're looking at how a suit jacket fits on you, you want to, you know, make sure that the shoulders aren't too narrow or too wide, because it really can affect the visual around the head, right? So when shoulders are too wide, it makes the head look too small. It's like this weird proportion thing.
Like Beetlejuice, the movie with the shrunk
head.
Yes,
exactly. Yeah, exactly.
And then the suit sleeves that come midway down your hand. It's like you just went in, you closed your eyes, you picked it off the rack, you put it on, and you took it. That's how it looks to me, but so many men wear the suits that are way, way too long.
Right. And the key with that is to have about a half of an inch of your dress shirt showing out, you know, so exposed from underneath the mm-hmm. length of your sleeve of the suit jacket.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
So the other thing about a suit jacket and how it should fit is the length of it is there's sort of this rule of thumb where the length of the jacket should be like to the knuckle when your arms are dangling down straight.
Oh, I never knew
the
that.
The hem of the jacket should be around the knuckle area of your thumb.
Assuming that the man doesn't have abnormally long or short arms. And I mean,
absolutely.
You know, is he a knuckle dragger or is he... otherwise.
Yeah.
You know what? We need to take a short break, and we're going to continue talking about the well-dressed man. You are listening to The Pulse 107.7, and we are in studio with Susan Osborne, beimageconsulting.com. And stay tuned. Food for Thought will be right back.
Food for Thought returns after these messages on 107.7 The Pulse.
Thought with Carol and Mike, 107.7 FM. And we're live at the Beacon Building at 814 Elm Street. And we are in studio with Susan Osborne of Bee Image Consulting. Check her out on the web at beeimageconsulting.com. And we're talking about the well-dressed man. And Mike is paying close attention, Barb.
I am. Yeah, and I'm pleased with she's got a real good fashion sense for herself. She has way more clothes than me, as it should be, I suppose. So let's talk a little bit men's shirts. I prefer a button-down collar. I don't know that those ever come in or out of style. I don't think they do, but it's probably wearing it the right time that matters. And when you kind of have it buttoned up for the tie, how do you know if it's too loose or too tight?
Oh, that's a good question.
Other than you know, choking to death. But sometimes you see these shirts that are like 2 inches too big, and you could never cinch a tie up all the way. So give me a little rule of thumb.
Yeah, okay.
That.
So the rule of thumb when you're trying to decide the neck size, right, of your of your shirt is you need to at least have room for two fingers
like
when the
collar.
Shirt is completely buttoned up.
Yeah,
it's a fit thing. So paying attention to the collar on the shirt so that it's not too big.
Good to know.
Or and obviously not too tight.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So two fingers.
Interesting.
Yep. And then you asked about the collar sort of style. What you're wearing right now is called a button-down style. And they're basically, well, there's a variety of different collar styles. But I'm just going to narrow it down to three most common ones, which is the button-down, a point collar, and a spread collar. So a lot of men have been asking about the spread collars in right now. There's a lot of shirts with spread collars, and it's a little bit more formal than the point collar. So a point collar is great for someone with a round face, right? So you want to pay attention to the angles of your face. Actually, is your face long and narrow? Round, that will dictate what kind of collar you're going to wear. So a point collar, great for a round face. A spread collar, terrible for a round face, actually.
Fatter,
it will
right?
accentuate the roundness. Yeah. So great for someone with like a longer angled face, narrow face. Yeah. And the button-down collar is just looks good on everyone. Yeah.
Now I have a question, because it seems like trending right now with men and you know, button down shirts, they wear them with them hanging out, you know, and then sometimes they'll even tuck, you know, one side in and the other side's hanging out, and you know, they don't tuck it in all the way around. I mean, what's your views on that? Like, do you have any comments about that?
Well, wearing it to an office absolutely needs to be tucked in.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay.
So wearing it casually, it's stylish and trendy for it to be worn untucked.
I actually like the look.
Yeah.
I like it.
And so some of the things that you'd want to pay attention to is the length of the shirt, right?
You don't want it too long.
Tail? Exactly. Yeah, you don't want it too long.
Like
but it
Tom
doesn't...
Cruise in Risky Business playing air guitar with his underwear and his shirt.
Exactly.
There's a visual.
I'm sorry, Carol.
Didn't mean to plant that in your head here.
So, and not necessarily one that's straight across either for a guy. You wouldn't, you know, women, you know, we have some shirts that do go straight across, but they may have a little bit of a
yeah,
tail.
Like the Tommy Bahama shirts, a lot of them are cut kind of straight across the bottom.
Right. And those are meant to be left untucked.
That's right.
So, yeah, what you're saying, Carol, sure, like something that is lower in the front, sort of
a little
comes up on each side, and then slightly longer in the back. But, yeah, you know, that's just a trendy personal style that's, you know, if that suits the
Seems
guy
like all
and
the,
his personality.
All, they're all doing it now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
You know Carson Kressley, of course. Carson Kressley from Queer Eye for the Straight Guy,
Yes.
He was the fashion guy. I've interviewed him a number of times, and one thing he said, Mikey, don't wear pleated pants. Okay, Carson, I don't anymore. Maybe at one time they were more in. What are your thoughts on pleated pants?
Pleated pants are great for a man who has large legs, who is portly.
Okay.
Who has a really wide, broad upper torso, right? Because it's all about building proportions. So what the pleats do, pleats are a detail. So it's going to add a little bit of bulk in that area. So it's visually, it's going to create balance to the body. So you know, just visualize for a minute someone like a football player with really wide shoulders and a narrow torso, narrow through the hips, actually would look better with pleated pants.
Oh, yeah. Interesting. So somebody like Mike, then, not good for pleats. Oh,
exactly. Right. Yeah.
Don't, okay. Don't wear them anymore. Carson Kressley set me straight on that.
Yeah, I don't think I'm a fan of pleated pants either. Yeah.
I think there were more of them years ago.
Because it's a detail. Yeah, it's a trendy thing, you know.
Sure.
So, but it can be used on people for, you know, symmetry, which works.
Interesting.
On the body.
Any other office faux moves here before we sign off?
One huge thing, which is don't button the bottom button of the suit jacket.
Right.
Ever.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, don't you just do like the middle one or something, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah. That's right.
Yeah, so you do if there's three, you have the choice of doing the top and the middle or just the middle.
Proper tie length, you should just see the tip of the tie under that open button on the bottom, right?
Yes.
Wow, Mike, I'm
very
impressed.
Good, Mike.
Well, I've been a man most of my life, so I you know, figured a few of these things out. In fact, Diane Sawyer is going to be over to the house later to talk to me.
Oh, brother. Oh, Susan, thank you so much. Another education.
Yay, Susan.
Very good.
Yay.
Thank you.
So we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Sounds great.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, listeners, Kale & Company is up next, and we will see everybody tomorrow. Bye-bye.
See ya.